Sirius XM 104.
It's the beginning of another week, Monday, October 7, 2013. My name is Pete Dominic. It's time to stand up. Today is the kickoff of Stand Up is on Drugs Week. All week, we'll take a look at all of the different dynamics from addiction to prevention, from the war on drugs, and we will do lots of drugs, just not on the program. In studio for the entire conversation today, Dr. Aaron Carroll will join us. Second hour drug history expert Claire Clark will give us a look at social studies lessons on narcotics. In the third hour, former Assistant Secretary of Education Diane Rabbit will join us to talk about her new book, brand new book, Reign of Air. And Halle Berry has given birth to our third child. Congratulations to Halle and I. I'm Pete Dominic. It's time to stand up with me right now. All right. Happy Monday, October 7th. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. I had my daughters pretty much all alone. My wife was at a workshop, and much respect to all those single parents out there. It is not easy. Posted that on the Facebook page, and a lot of conversation there if you want to hear about single parents. All right. We've got so much to get to. Dr. Aaron Carroll is sitting in. Why are you here?
Because I was here on vacation, actually.
Oh, that's right. We went out on Saturday night. We had drinks. Unfortunately, my wife couldn't join us, but Dr. Carroll's lovely wife, Amy, was there, and we met up late for drinks. And then you're here. Your wife took you to New York to celebrate your birthday, and you're here one more day, so why not come in and join us?
Absolutely. I never miss a chance to come in.
Thank you for being here. There's plenty to talk about with you, and we're going to get to plenty of health policy, but I want you chiming in on everything throughout the program, including...
Especially drugs.
Drugs, yes, right. Lots of drugs, and we're gonna all week long, Alfred. It's drug week. Alfred's been working on this for years now, and we finally implemented all of his experiences into the program. And we're gonna have a lot of great guests every day. We'll have a guest and at least a call segment or two on different elements of drugs. Right, I can't even say one thing or the other because it's everything. We're taking every approach we can. We're talking about as many drugs as we can, from meth to marijuana, cocaine, heroin, and Tylenol.
All of my experiments have paid off now.
That's right.
I knew I was experimenting for a reason.
Show of hands, I know it's radio, but if you're on any kind of drug right now, Aaron?
Evidently, I'm the only one not on a drug.
All right. Everybody else. What is more dangerous than alcohol or marijuana, Dr. Carroll? Alcohol or marijuana?
Pretty much everything. No,
those two, which is more dangerous?
Oh, of the two? Oh, alcohol.
All right.
Hands down.
And have you ever done cocaine, Chris?
Sorry, my mic won't work.
Sure.
All right.
That mic always is
weird. I answered, but it cut out. Did you guys not hear me?
Yeah, we didn't hear you. What was the answer?
I said I would.
Huh. That's weird.
And I was just.
Yeah.
I never.
I don't know what
I've done.
I don't know what
loved every minute of it.
I don't know what that's all about. I think it's just funny that Peyton Manning is 5-0 and Eli Manning is 0-5. We don't talk sports here, but I just wanted to mention that I think that's funny. And I also think that the Denver Broncos have the best uniforms in the NFL.
Ugh,
moving on.
I was remarking earlier how awful they were.
The movie Gravity apparently is – tell us your brother Bill Schultz's review of Gravity.
I mean, it's not my review, so –
it's your brother. That's why I said tell us your brother's review.
I don't want to speak for him, but he did tell
me – let all the facts come in. Let's wait for the dust to settle.
I want the dust to settle, but – he told me it was the best movie theater going experience he's ever had in his life. Not that it was the greatest movie he's ever seen, but the best theater going he saw it.
And
in
he
IMAX
saw it in 3D on
3D.
The IMAX.
Said you have to see it like that, and he just said that he thought about it all night.
You're a sci-fi guy, Aaron. You're a big George Clooney fan, I would imagine. I don't know.
But I remarked before I even came on that I saw like a 15-second clip of it on the air, and I felt nauseous and scared and just from like 15 seconds with no sound. I got to go see this.
Just the trailer, watching the trailer is an experience. I was like, wow.
I
got done watching the trailer, I was like, wow, that is crazy feeling.
I don't know. That clip was almost worse than the trailer.
Do you get motion sickness and stuff? I mean, is that...
I do after like, my kids dragged me to like Kings Island, an amusement park this summer. And after like the third or fourth ride, I started seeing stars. Then I got nauseous.
But what about if you watch something?
Not really, but No, no, not usually from watching things.
All right, well, everybody is entitled to join the conversation. That's what we do here on Stand Up, so be a part of it. 866-994-6343 is the phone number to join the conversation. We want you to be a part of it. We have a friend and listener who is serving in the United States Army at a combat hospital in Afghanistan, and I got emails. He and I emailed all weekend long, and it was weird to find out before news broke that a number of U.S. Military members had been killed in Afghanistan. That news breaks this morning on the publicly, but obviously they don't. I was talking to this guy off the record. He's saying don't say anything, but I got emails over the weekend from him. But here is the official news. NBC News reports 4 U.S. soldiers were killed in an attack in southern Afghanistan, defense officials said on Sunday. The International Security Assistance Force did not identify the nationalities, but the 4 Americans were killed by a bomb in the early hours on Sunday. And speaking of the military, probably everybody heard, but this is pretty big news, but they 2 major operations occurred over the weekend, one in Somalia and one in Libya. The one in Somalia was SEAL Team 6, and they apparently failed their mission, but no one died. They were trying to capture one of the leaders of Al-Shabaab, which is this group that attacked that mall in Kenya. And then they had a successful mission. It was Army Delta gets the win on this one. They captured, actually, a guy named Abu Anas Alibi, who has he's an original member of Al-Qaeda, apparently real good buddies with bin Laden, and apparently responsible for the embassy attacks in 1999 in Kenya and Tanzania. He has been captured and is being held aboard the USS San Antonio and will be brought to New York after he is questioned. He has not been read his rights, but we've heard this whole thing before. So that's all big news over the weekend in terms of military operations, guys losing their lives in Afghanistan. That doesn't obviously make any sense anymore. And we also saw a report in New York Times saying we might pull out of Afghanistan completely. That's another thing that we're going to talk about this week by the end of 2014. So we'll see what happens with that. And obviously, it is the big headline here on October 7th, Monday, October 7th, 2013. Dr. Carol, the government's still shut down.
Yeah, it is.
And that's over your...
Yay, America.
Your precious Obamacare, right?
Well, I don't know. They don't say that. Aren't they saying now it's about the debt? I think we did one of those we're at East Eurasia at this point.
The debt ceiling and the government shutdown. What about passing piecemeal approaches, appropriations bills just to start? The government shutdown, but there's some things that are making headlines. So Republicans have come up with a solution to, you know, pass different things that fund these different parts of the government. And Rand Paul said that. I mean, that's how it's done anyway.
Well, first of all, it's not. Usually we pass a budget, but that hasn't happened in quite a long time. But even if they did that, I mean, you know, there's 800,000 people off work right now. Each time they pass one of these things, we put a small number of them back. But they're talking about a short-term resolution anyway of a couple of weeks. So is that all we'll do at this point, is constantly pass small-time bills just to keep tiny pieces of the government open for a couple of weeks? It's not how we do it.
One of the things that really, really, really made me angry, and I try not to get too emotionally wrapped up in this stuff because we talk about it every day, and if I did that, then I take it home with me. So I try not to, but I couldn't help it last week. I was supposed to be hanging out with my kids in the afternoon. They had come home from school. I'm supposed to be helping them with homework, and I'm tweeting and Facebooking because I'm enraged that Republicans are outraged that the NIH has closed and needs to be funded. And why am I outraged? Because they have voted over and over in their budgets, and using the sequester move has cut major funding to NIH. So they've historically not been supportive of NIH until we find out, as we talked with you last Monday, I think, about the part where kids with cancer were going to get their last chance at treatment at NIH. What is NIH? What is that?
Well, it's the National Institutes of Health. It's basically where all the research, for medical research that the United States supports goes through. Some of it is done by the physical buildings and people who actually work for the NIH. Some of it is done, much of what I do, for instance, is where there's they give grants to groups all over the country, lots of universities, lots of academics to also do research. And all of that is shut down, but it's all research. That's what it is. It gets advances in medicine. It spurs science and innovation, and Yes, it is right now shut down.
Is there any – could you ever say, yeah, NIH is overfunded? When I think of NIH, I think of a lot of it is they handle money to give out to researchers like you. And so in for me, it's like I want as much research being done in the private sector and in the public sector, especially when it comes to science and medicine. What kind of research – do they do? Can there be too much money that the NIH has to give out in grants?
I imagine it's theoretically possible that they could have too much, at which point they would sort of overcome what is needed, and therefore people who perhaps didn't have good ideas or wouldn't do good work would take the money just to squander it. But we have to be far away from that.
We often hear, because it's politically obviously advantageous to talk about, like in the stimulus plan, there was like, oh, there's $1 million for research and blueberries and this and that, those types of things. That's what we're talking about with NIH, right?
Yeah.
Well, you hear a bit or a piece of a research project that's taken out of context, and of course it does sound absurd and ridiculous to the average American that government would be funding any kind of research
This would be like saying that, oh my God, they're doing research, you know, some crazy person's doing research in fruit fly sex. But that is how we discovered how genetics works. You know, fruit flies breeding was how much of the original research was done.
Really?
To learn about
what do you mean?
Because
how
fruit
genetics?
Flies reproduce so quickly, they could actually look for traits in fruit flies and breed them and actually figure out how traits are passed on. It's the same way you can make fun of Gregor Mendel back in the days. Like, oh, he's just breeding, you know, pea plants. And what are we going to learn from people? Well, that's how genetics was done. You know, that's how they figured it all out.
When you get money to do a research project at Indiana University, do you get it from a number of different resources?
I've had funding from ARC, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. I've had funding.
That's
from
a government agency?
Yeah, and the NIDDK, which is the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive Disorders and Kidney Diseases. And then I've had research from the National Library of Medicine. I mean, I've had grant funding from there and from foundations as well, but those are all sort of houses of the NIH, because the NIH is the National Institutes with an S of Health. There are many of them. Some focus on cancer, some focus on addiction, some focus on infectious diseases, and so there's a number of them, and you figure out which one is best for your research.
When people make the argument, when people that are kind of anti-government and they don't like the size of government, or they don't like, you know, the certain roles that government is playing, when it comes specifically to government's role in doing research and the NIH, could I make an argument that that would be better done at the local level, and that states should have more power over science and research and granting funding and so on?
First of all, it is done at the local level.
The NIH
does do some research at the physical plant of the NIH, but I'd say a ton of the money is they give it out to local people. I mean, I live in Indiana. I'm doing research in Indiana. And we also say, well, should it be done? Should the decision be made at the federal government or locally? It's not as if that the federal government has a board that does this. They create study sections. So they create groups of people from all over the country to read the grants, review the grants, and then decide how to rank them. I was supposed to have a study section last week. I'm supposed to go to one next week, which I'm sure will now be canceled. Because we can't do anything while the government is shut down. But they have a collection of grants all in sort of a broad area of interest that I might have some expertise in. We read a certain number of them. We get assigned different roles. We rank them. We all come together. Multiple people have read each grant. Everybody tries to view all of them. And then we talk about all of them. And there are people from all over the country, and they rank them and put them in order, and then they all go into a big pot somewhere. And then another group of people made from people all over the country decides which grants get the money. So it's not some sort of nameless, faceless, politically appointed board. It's people from all probably political stripes. It's people from all parts of the country, and they all rank and give out the grants, which all go to the local level.
This has not historically been like a political football, the NIH, right? I mean,
it has at certain times. Like, when ARC was first started, they had a funding, and they did some research that, of course, looked at firearms and their risk and their harms. And then it became unbelievably controversial, and the ARC almost got completely defunded because they dared to touch guns.
Right.
And so that's actually – there has not been much gun research done since then. Anytime they touch drugs, anytime they touch sex in a way that people don't like. But at the beginning when they were doing research into HIV, that was very political. So at times it can become political, but you try not to, because everybody pretty much benefits from medical research. Everybody. So it's hard to sort of – You know, even people will make fun of it. People will demonize it. They will find something that they will often ignorantly pick and then say, look how silly this study is. But it all has big implications because it's all been reviewed by multiple people and you know, try to figure out, is it worth the money? And if they get the money, the answer is yes.
Dr. Aaron Carroll joined us for the entire program, and you can as well. You can give us a phone call and ask anything you want. 866-994-6343. I'm at Pete Dominic. Dr. Carroll is at Aaron E. Carroll. That video you made with the great YouTube star John Green is up to like hundreds of thousands
of
hits.
Yeah, it's like 180-some thousand views.
That's
I'm
huge.
Blown away. It's
you
great.
Don't even need any more promotion on
I
that.
Would love promotion on that.
And he is a professor of pediatrics and the director of the Center for Health Policy and Professionalism Research at Indiana University. He's also an author. Two books, Don't Swallow Your Gum, Myths, Half-Truths, and Outright Lies About Your Body and Your Health, and Don't Cross Your Eyes, They'll Get Stuck That Way. He blogs at The Incidental Economist. Aaron, you know, one thing that keeps coming up, I think probably the one of the most popular myths that you try to debunk is sugar and hyperactivity in kids.
Just was writing about this.
Like,
yeah.
That keeps key. I hear that as the father of kids all the time, and people argue, you cannot tell me that is not true. I see it. I literally watch my kids ingest sugar and then watch them bounce on. So is it possible that there is how come when I am supposed to go on a long bike ride or long run, I'm supposed to take all those? There's 1,000 products on the market now that have.
Well, you're not.
Well, they give you energy though. They do
no,
give you. They don't give you energy.
Well,
so these gummy, chewy things that I eat that have caffeine in them that give me energy, that's caffeine.
I bet if you're a superstar athlete who's, you know, needs that tiny extra burst, which is going to make the difference between, you know, winning the marathon or not winning the marathon, and has, you know, is so lean and runs on, like, literally no reserves, and so, yes, every tiny bit makes a difference. Yeah, maybe. But
no, but that's not the question I'm asking. Does it give you energy?
Look at it this way. If you put gas in your car can go. If you have no gas in your car will not. But if your car is half full, adding more gasoline does not make your car go faster. It doesn't, you know, that might let you go longer, but it doesn't make you go faster.
So what's the myth that you're debunking then? And why do you pronounce gas with a Z and not an S?
I don't know. I think that might be a
Philly
thing. I
think you said gasoline, too.
I think that's a
Philadelphia. Did you hear that?
It's Philadelphia.
All right, fine.
How dare you attack?
I'm sorry. I just heard a Z and where I thought there was an S.
Water,
I thought my audience probably heard it as well.
Yes, they probably did.
What is the myth that you're debunking?
Sugar doesn't make you hyper. You need glucose and you need sugar for energy. If you don't have it, you won't be able to go, and it's definitely not good for your health. But adding more sugar, eating more sugar doesn't overload you. It's not as if adding more energy to your body makes your body suddenly unable to regulate its own energy. So they don't get hyper. And this has been I can't describe how there have been 12, I think at least 12 randomized controlled trials of children looking at whether it makes them hyper. You give them more sugar in their diet and they watch them. They give them boluses of sugar like candy and they watch them. They give them all different kinds, you know, complex carb, whatever. They give them different kinds of carbohydrates, and they watch them. They videotape them. They get other people to rate them. All of them show that there's no difference in hyperactivity if they get sugar or not. And again, I've said this one on the show before, but the best study of them all was they got together a group of kids whose parents said they were specifically sensitive to sugar. My kid, you know, is sensitive to sugar. He gets hyper when I have sugar.
Right.
And they gave all of them diet soda. And then they lied to half the parents and told those parents, we gave your kids sugar. And those parents rated their children as more hyperactive.
Ah, the parents.
Because if they believe it, they see it because they believe it. It's entirely in your head. If you think that you think your kids get more active or get hyperactive when they have sugar, yeah, you believe it. So you see it. And so they're not actually doing it. And other people, even if they don't get sugar and I tell you they have sugar, you would think they were hyperactive only because you believe it. There's no reality in it.
Dr. Aaron Carroll in studio. We can debunk myths. We can talk about health policy. We can talk about just about anything. He'll be here for the entire 3 hours. And you can give us a call, 866-994-6343, to join the conversation. Dave wants to ask about gluten. What is gluten?
It's in wheat. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, good morning, Doctor. Good morning, Pete.
Hi,
Dave. I just got done reading a book called The Grain Brain. Have you heard of it, Doctor?
I have heard of it, yes.
And he's, you know, I've been following a no-gluten diet. I had no symptoms, no celiac symptoms or anything like that, but I just find my body feels so much better. I'm 59. My joints feel better. I have a clear head thinking. I'd just like to hear what you think about that.
Well, gluten's become very sort of in the popular lately because there's been an increased recognition of celiac disease, which occurs in some people.
And, what is that?
It's an inability to correctly like digest gluten. And so therefore you actually get ill or you don't digest things well or you know, it can, depending upon the severity, it can be a severe problem about whether or not you get gluten. So at that point, you have to try.
Maybe that's what you have, Alfred.
I have a lot of things.
No.
That's
so.
He does some weird. He goes to the bathroom at weird times and for weird lengths.
Well, there could
of
be
time.
Any number of reasons that could be.
I would rate you as a person who's not regular.
Well, heroin will do that.
I disagree.
Heroin.
I regularly take heroin and I regularly go to the bathroom.
You don't think you have any issues with your digestive system?
Not really, no.
You think you're regular?
Yeah. Kind of. I don't pay
a lot of attention.
Sounds like you do.
Well,
he's super sure of it. Kind of.
Yeah. So are you regular?
I mean, yeah, I think so. I mean, so generally the same times every day, generally. Sometimes
you over-exaggerate your BMs to some extent.
I disagree with that.
Back to Dave. So celiac disease with gluten can actually make it so that you're not digesting it correctly. So those people who have celiac disease do need to eliminate gluten from their diet. This has led, of course, other people to think, well, maybe we should all be eliminating gluten. Well, first of all... most people don't. I mean, this is one of those things.
Isn't gluten everything?
Exactly. Well, evolutionarily, it's like we grew up on wheat and other things. And granted, we started like using it more. But it's not as if like people were dropping dead back in the days. This is not like eating red meat. Now, there are people in the United States that eat too many carbs. And it's, you know, it's bad for their diets and it's bad for their weight and bad for everything else. And let me tell you, when you decide to eliminate gluten, you have to start eliminating a ton of carbs. Because unless you can find gluten free, it's in tons of everything. So, So I think you often find that people who eliminate gluten are definitely losing weight and feeling better. I'm not necessarily sure it's because they're eliminating gluten or because their diets become healthier in general when they eliminate the foods that have gluten. So this is one of those where, man, if it works for you, great, go ahead. You know, diet is a very individual thing. If you find a way to lose weight, feel healthier, be more active, great. I'm all for it. I'm not going to, you know, tell you what to do. However, hesitate to tell millions of other people that this is what you have to do to feel better, that this is the way to do it.
How does a guy like Dave know, though, that, you know, Dave calls in and we're all psyched that Dave is feeling better about everything energy-wise and his joints don't hurt, but how does Dave know that it's because of the gluten and not because of something else? And if I cut out gluten, would that be necessarily – I mean, how do you know that there's a correlation?
He could try. I mean, it depends how much you want to care, how much you care. You know, if it's not costing you any more money to lead a gluten-free lifestyle, if it's not really – you know, making your life inconvenient, if you're happy, if you're healthy, who gives a crap? Do it. But, you know, if you want to know, then slowly add some gluten back into your diet or spend like a month off gluten, spend a month on gluten. You know, you can sort of run little mini studies in your own life. This is not like you're adding in crack. You know, gluten's not unless you have celiac disease, it's not going to hurt you. So if you're truly concerned, then go ahead and test it out. But if you're not and it's not costing you a ton and you're happy, then just keep doing it.
Pete, you should try it. My energy level.
Now is when I have to interrupt and say it's when you start telling other people that this is what they should do, because that's not known.
I don't want to try it. I have
then
no
don't.
I love pasta is my favorite thing.
And if you're a good weight and you're happy and you're healthy, then it's fine. Just leave it. There's no evidence. This is my point. There's no evidence that this works in any way that I would say then we should start telling other people it's what to do. So I tell you, do what you like, do what works for you. It's when we start all of a sudden saying, well, this is what's worked for me, therefore everybody else should try it. That's not how science and research works.
All right. It just totally changed my life, though. I just wanted to
I'm happy for you.
Well, we're going to talk about drugs totally changing your life as well later and all week because it's drug week. Stand Up is on drugs all week, and we're going to be doing a segment or two every day here and plenty to talk about with things that make us happy but may or may not be healthy for us. Dr. Aaron Carroll is hanging out the entire 3 hours today. And the big story today and all through the weekend and really all last week, and it would have been a much bigger story if not for the government shutdown, is that the rollout of Obamacare is not going well because the website doesn't work.
It just sucks. I mean, there's just no other way to talk about it.
How? I mean, is this not evidence that government can't do it? I mean, that's people are going to have no problem, you know, making that case or feeling like they've got more evidence for that case. I mean, you know, I mean, they can't build. They had plenty of time.
Well, they didn't have plenty of money. I mean, this is the thing. It's like we gotta look at a couple of different things. So, first of all, when you say government can't do it, it is not as if they had, you know, people who the year before were pencil pushers somewhere, and they said, "Hey, man, build us a website." They got civilians with skills to build the website. It is not as if they, again, government. It wasn't President Obama writing code trying to get the HTML to work. They got people with expertise to do it, but it's shockingly expensive and difficult to run servers to, you know, take that much traffic. You know, it's enormous. Like, you know, I think I read some of the, like, they got more traffic in, you know, a short period of time than Southwest gets in like a week or a month. So they just got crushed. And I read somewhere else that I think it's like just building California's for the state of California costs like $600 million. So I can only imagine what it costs to build a national infrastructure to try to do this. We know they cut the implementation budget to nothing. And we know that they aren't successfully giving the government what they want. The Republicans are taking every opportunity to defund all of these things. So I'm not surprised they're having difficulty. Probably some of it is just server traffic. That said, there's no excuse. They got to get this thing going. And even if they have to just start taking phone calls, whatever they got to do, they have to get this going.
Do you think that this week, you know, they're saying that the conventional wisdom, the president's saying that, Kathleen Sebelius is saying that she's going to be on The Daily Show, by the way. You know, Jon Stewart's going to give her a very hard time about this tonight. Is that they've been inundated with traffic. You're saying that.
Yeah, they have.
Is it possible? Well, you know, what's his name? Chris Wallace had Jack Lew on. I don't think I even told you guys to get that piece. I don't know if we have it, Melanie. But basically, he was like, how many people signed up? How many people have signed up?
Yeah, they're not saying. No, they won't say.
So if all these people are going, how come they're not signing up?
Because it's crashing. I mean, have you gone? Have you tried?
Just the first day I tried it.
And you didn't get through, I imagine. Mm. So they're all going, but if nobody gets through, then it's irrelevant how many people go.
So what is your biggest concern about the technology not working in this first week?
Ironically enough, this would have been so much worse for Obamacare if the Republicans hadn't shut down the government.
Because that would have been all.
Because this would have been the story of the week. We would have been hammering on it. So in Ted Cruz's wildest dreams, the best thing that could have happened was he didn't do what he did so that we could all have spent the last week talking about how Obamacare stinks and how, yes, like what you said, government shouldn't be involved in this. Government's terrible. We should have left it to the private sector. It's all whole boondoggle, blah, 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 blah. Well, that's what would have been every story on the news. And instead, all we talk about is government shutdown, which was caused to stop Obamacare. And, of course, Obamacare is still going and the government is shut down. So it's that would have been the story. And so, you know, but it's not. And instead, we're not focusing on this. But it will eventually become the story if they don't get their act together and figure this out. And that public perception and how this is all going is still a big deal. If people still think that Obamacare is terrible, that Obamacare doesn't work, that Obamacare is breaking the country, that will only be reinforced eventually by the fact that the website doesn't work, the website can't get anyone signed up, nobody can get it anyway, and so it doesn't matter how much money we throw at this, this was the bad way to do it. And that narrative can happen if this continues. So that would be my biggest concern. I'm not concerned people won't eventually get the insurance. That'll happen. They'll figure it out. They have a long time. We don't want people to sign up for insurance on day one. I mean, as much as Obama would like that.
What do you
mean? Well, why should, you know, let's think about it from a rational standpoint. The insurance doesn't kick in to January 1, so why would you want to pay for it right away? Why not buy it in December?
Wait, what?
The insurance doesn't kick in until January 1.
So you're going to pay for something for 3 months you're not going to get?
I'm not sure. I think I read somewhere, and granted, I haven't been able to sign up yet, but I don't know if like you have to put a down payment down or if they start charging you. I don't know how any of this works, but why sign up for it now when you can sign up for it in November and it still doesn't kick in until January 1? So that's the first thing. Second is, it's a big decision. You know, people should be weighing how much do you want to pay in premiums, how much do you want to pay in deductible, how much do you want to pay in coinsurance. They haven't been able to see the options yet to even see what's available. They should take a look at I don't know how Sirius does it. Every year we have open enrollment.
Right.
And, yeah, you know, they tell us the dates of when it is. It's like a month-long period. And for months ahead of time, they're inundating us with data about, like, these are your options. And there's usually, like, three. It's not like there's, like, a million. There's, like, two or three options. People debate about it. They have town halls.
But there's not options for different companies. There's options for different plans within one company.
So this is
most companies only offer one insurance company choice. Right?
Ironically enough, I think we have multiple companies, but there's only one plan per company. So it's like there's three plans. But regardless, doesn't matter. There's still the town halls. You have to go. You can go the benefit seminars, and people weigh their options. Which one am I going to do? And then, you know, at the end of the month, there's all these frantic emails like, sign up quickly. It's going to be over. Nobody shows up on day one with their packet like, oh my God, I can't wait to sign up.
Think that they would because they need it now. People
but you won't get
waiting.
It now. You won't get it now. Even if you sign up tomorrow, it doesn't kick in till January 1. So what's the rush? The rush has always been the administration wants the rush. Because they want to lock people in and be able to broadcast, like millions of people are signing up.
Right.
And because they also want tons of healthy people to sign up, and they don't want to get caught at the last second. And if your company, if you don't sign up for the insurance, well, that's actually not so terrible for the company. But for Obamacare, if you don't sign up, we got a big problem. So they're a bit more concerned. But there is no benefit to you to sign up today as opposed to next week as opposed to the weekend.
All right, we're going to take our first and only break of the hour, and we're going to come back with more with Dr. Carroll and your calls, 866-994-6343. You can tweet me at Pete Dominic. He's at Aaron E. Carroll. This is Stand Up, Important Issues, The Best Guests, Thoughtful Conversation, and a sprinkle or two of humor. Right, Chris, Alfred, huh?
Sure.
Yeah, that's right. That is right. All right, Chris, what did you do this weekend?
Oh, well, this is pretty funny. Went
Looked
to
like
yet
were...
another going away party,
yeah,
bringing the total to 10 close friends of mine who've all left New York City in the last year and a half.
Why is everybody leaving?
And I love this story.
Taxes.
That's pretty funny, right? All your close friends moving away.
I saw a video. I saw a video that you made of the party, it looked like.
Yeah.
On Vine.
We kegged it up.
Did you really have a keg at your party?
Yeah, I have a friend who hasn't left New York yet. He works at a brewery. He'll probably leave in April.
A keg of what?
Pilsner.
What is Pilsner? Is that a name of a beer? Is that
no,
a
no.
Beer?
It was from Kelso Brewing Company in Brooklyn, New York.
No, isn't that a type of beer?
Yes, it is.
It's also Pilsner.
The rest of us all knew that.
I know. I'm fine that I don't know everything about beer like you guys. I'm not nearly as much.
Budweiser
of a
is a Pilsner.
Well, that's what I thought. That's why I thought it was weird that he said just Pilsner as opposed to like the name of the brand of beer.
He probably should have said a Pilsner. Would have been easier to understand.
Only for Pete.
This is a hoot. You're right. There is a lot of humor in this show.
I do like the fact he started off his story with going, "Well, I like the snapping of the tongue before."
Who did that?
Chris did.
Oh, I didn't pick up.
Well,
on that.
Pete, let me just tell you. But you know it's going to be a fun story when someone does a snap beforehand.
Well,
so
now I'm sorry that I asked anything and didn't just go to break. We'll be right back.
Stand Up with Pete Dominic. You're listening to a radio bumper for a show. Now some music, then talking.
All right, it's Stand Up on... Is on Drugs Week? Stand Up on Drugs Week? What is it? What are we calling it? Stand Up is on Drugs Week.
You said, yeah, I mean, yeah, I you like said it. Stand Up is on Drugs, like so Stand Up is on Drugs
Week. Stand Up is on Drugs Week. All week long, we'll take a look at the war on drugs and addiction and much more. Dr. Aaron Carroll's hanging out. He's in New York over the weekend visiting with his wife. And so, of course, he's going to hang out to do the show. Not of course. Thank you for getting up early and hanging out.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Glad
it
to
is,
have you here.
I'm always happy to be here.
As obviously this we continue into day six, I guess, of the government shutdown, because it shut down last Tuesday night.
6 days, 36 minutes. No, that's, I'm sorry. That's 6 days, 6 hours, 36 minutes, and 53 seconds.
Oh, according to CNN. That's right. And CNN's showing the monkey bars Al-Qaeda video right now.
Watch out for your arms, Al-Qaeda. Don't fall and break your arms on the monkey bars.
My daughter actually broke her arm on the monkey bars. So
maybe there's like a Homeland thing going on. Maybe she's
Fox News showing Miley Cyrus twerking right next to it, which is the very strange juxtaposition.
Yeah. One is showing Al-Qaeda. The other one is showing Miley Cyrus. Apparently, she hosted Saturday Night Live this weekend. Is that the deal? Is that
yes. What I yeah. Hosted and performed. Yep.
Hmm. How did that go? Anybody know?
It was pretty good. It was all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. She didn't, as someone put online, she didn't defecate on the stage and then throw it at the audience. So that's pretty good. It's a good start. She's pretty, you know, I mean, she was a child actor and, you know, she's a performer. She knows what she's doing.
Ritholtz.
Big Miley fan.
Outraged!
Barry Ritholtz tweeting, if shutdown isn't resolved, stocks could fall 20 to 30%. what about, all right, let me ask Dr. Carroll about another health policy issue, and we're going to try to maybe debunk some myths about drugs, as it is Stand Up is on Drugs Week. Later on the program, Diane Ravitz is going to join us to talk about her new book, and we're going to have an expert on the history of drugs in the next hour as well, talk to us about America's history with drugs. But one thing I think that's really interesting that people may or may not know, even including the people that live in these states, and there's been a lot written about it throughout this and certainly since the Supreme Court decision, is that there are a number of states, Dr. Carroll, about 25 states or so, that are not going to be able to – they're not participating in the Medicaid expansion.
Yeah.
Which, the way I frame it, it's you have people paying their federal income taxes but not getting the benefits of that.
Yeah.
And I guess technically it wouldn't be the people that are getting necessarily Medicaid expansion or probably aren't paying a lot in federal income taxes.
Probably not, but still the rest of the state is, and the rest of the state would see significant economic benefits.
So you have a number of states that have a huge amount of them. There's been a lot of stories recently written about this, some good journalism being done in some of these states where journalists go down to, say, South Carolina as one of these states, and they talk to all of the people that are uninsured that would be able to get insurance through the Medicaid expansion, but they are not. That is not happening in their states.
No.
Because the Supreme Court decided states did not have to do this in their major decision on Obamacare. They didn't say the individual mandate was unconstitutional. They didn't say the law was unconstitutional. They did say states did not have to expand their Medicaid rolls. And finally, why wouldn't you? The federal government is going to pay for this.
Right.
The entire thing, and then 90%, and then once they're not paying for the vast majority of it, states can then opt out. So why not at least do it at first? And is it because they don't want people to get on the Medicaid expansion and like it and then drop it and politically – I mean, what is – there's got to be a political strategy behind
it. Yeah, I don't think there's any one reason. And let's back up for 1 second, because this is one of those where I think we can say it's the Supreme Court's fault, but I'm not sure that this one is, because – and this will be where we get Siegel to yell at me if I'm wrong. But this was not a 5-4 decision. It was a 7-2 decision. So even liberals on the court were like, yeah, this is a little
this
coercive.
This part of it, or?
The Medicaid expansion. The Medicaid expansion should be optional was a 7-2 decision. And I'm not even sure that they're wrong. And granted, I'm not a lawyer, but it's there's no question that, you know, it should be that, you know, government programs like state-based programs should be optional. States should be able to participate them or not participate in them. That's how original Medicaid was. Arizona, the last state, didn't join up till the mid-'80s.
Really?
And so, yeah. So the original Medicaid was take it or don't take it, and a lot of states did not take it. You know, the liberal ones took it at first. The conservative states came around later. Arizona, again, was two decades later. So it was an optional thing, and it all worked out fine, and years later we all love it. And that's how it's supposed to work. I mean, we have still a republic. You know, we have still, like, sort of state-based governments and a federal government, and that is how they pick it up. And so there's nothing wrong with sort of passing a Medicaid expansion, making it as sweet as possible and saying, we hope states will pick it up. That's how it should work. To say, we're going to take away all your old Medicaid unless you engage in this new program, that is somewhat coercive. I mean, that's extortion. That's do what we want or we'll do something much, much worse to you. And states said that that's extortion. I think that there's an argument to be made that it is. And there was a 7-2 decision that it should be optional. Okay, so I'm not sure the Supreme Court is totally wrong there. Having said that, you're right. The federal government did everything in their power to make it as sweet a deal as they could so that states would want to pick this up. States are doing 100% of the Medicaid expansion to start, and then over the next few years, it just trickles down to where they're covering still 90% of the cost of the Medicaid expansion. Traditional Medicaid, the feds are only on the hook for 50 to 75%. So this is a much better deal. The vast majority of states would see huge reductions in their uninsured for a very small amount of their spending on the Medicaid versus a very small amount of their budgets. Even after 2020 or whenever it is, or when it gets down to 90%, it's still a really good deal for the states. There have been tons of studies that show, you know, based upon a reduction of taxes that wouldn't have to happen, some other programs that they could scrap, return to economic investment into the state, because it turns out that Medicaid's a pretty good multiplier, that giving people Medicaid actually makes the economy function better. And so you often get a better return on your investment by putting the money into Medicaid. And since the federal government's paying for it and the states are seeing the benefit, most states would wind up actually making money. They made it a sweet, sweet deal. Arizona, you know, if you're worried that they're someday going to renege, do what Arizona did, where they passed a law that said, we're taking the Medicaid expansion, but if you ever break the rules of this deal, it becomes less than 90% or something else happens, then the Medicaid expansion is instantly disbanded. And it goes away. Sort of puts
what are the arguments? I shouldn't be asking you necessarily, what are the arguments for those states that are not expanding Medicaid as Obamacare creates the opportunity to do? Why do they say they don't? They're not doing it?
Some say it's because it's a cost at all. That even 90% or 10% is too much, and then of course at the beginning it's 0%, it's 100%. So then they'll say, well, it still costs us like $10 million to do some administrative work, and then it's like, are you kidding me?
All right,
but I mean it's a tiny, tiny cost for what they're getting. Mm-hmm. The second argument is like, well, someday they're going to renege. You know, we'll get everybody on Medicaid, and then
they can stop,
or you could just look at history and say, hey, you know what? Has the federal government ever reneged on Medicaid, period, which is a much larger program? And the answer, of course, is no. Federal government has never not paid its bills. In fact, Medicaid has often expanded, but almost never contracted in that way. The federal government does that. And then another reason is they do what they call the woodwork problem. So even though they're doing a Medicaid expansion, a certain percentage of the population already qualifies for Medicaid as it stands today. But still, lots of people are not signed up for Medicaid. Often that's because the states will make it so onerous that some people don't apply for Medicaid, because that's what they're doing on purpose. They're trying to keep people off the rolls. It reduces their budget. So there are people who qualify who are not on Medicaid. If those people sign up for Medicaid tomorrow, they don't get the sweet, sweet 100% deal of the federal government. Previously qualifying people have to go on traditional Medicaid, where states could be on the hook for 25 to 75% of the cost. I mean, sorry, 25 to 50% of the cost. So if they come out of the woodwork and they already qualify, they are a bigger cost to the state. And some states fear these people coming out because they don't want them to. Then they worry if we do a Medicaid expansion, we're going to get more of those people too. The problem with this argument is that they're going to come out of the woodwork anyway. There's a lot of stuff on the news about people getting insurance. They've heard about the mandate. They're scared. They're going to come sign up for that Medicaid even if we don't do the Medicaid expansion. They can't be turned down.
Have you heard stories, and have you, in your experience, people that are so – I don't want to, you know, be real mean and insulting, but people that are so uneducated and so uninformed that, you know, they're adults. They're functioning, working adults, but they don't have insurance, and they don't understand what health insurance is even for. and then they end up getting sick or injured, and obviously then they know they have to go to hospital. But I mean, is that a common thing that people are uninsured and don't even know that they should be insured? Do people go through their lives not understanding the need or function of health insurance?
It's less that than it is that they're sometimes so downtrodden and so beaten. Sometimes physically, but I mean more emotionally, that they're just to jump through one more hoop. I think some of them just don't believe that it's out there. Some of them just don't know. And some of them, it's very hard in some states to sign up for Medicaid. You have to go to offices at certain places at certain times of the day with certain information that people just don't have on hand. And they're trying to get jobs. Some of them are employed. So how do you take off from your job in the middle of the day when you don't have a car and you live in a city with bad public transportation to try to get across town to this, to wait in line, and then they ask you for 20 pieces of paper. You don't understand what these papers are. And then they tell you, oh, by the way, you have to do this every 6 months because we automatically disenroll everybody every 6 months and make you sign up again.
Do you think it's irresponsible for a healthy young adult to not get health insurance? Is it irresponsible, do you think?
I hate to use that word. But I think it's, people will take a gamble. But the problem is that there are too few people who actually – people will talk a big game and say, well, I'm independent. I will pay my bills. But, of course, those people, you never know when the traffic accident is just around the corner.
Well, here's one thing that I don't understand. And granted, I live in my own little world. But, I grew up and most of my friends are pretty active, athletes and so on. If you're a young person and you're healthy, you're probably going to be active. You want to go and do things and run and bike, and maybe you're in a soccer league or something like that. I mean, can a person be young and also very active and not have health insurance? Isn't that irresponsible? You can't have cycling be a hobby and not have health insurance.
Well,
you can say
that cycling, but I mean, thyroid cancer strikes young women. Testicular cancer often strikes young men. There are tons of illnesses that happen to young people. Granted, your odds are pretty good. You're not going to have a chronic illness, so you're not likely going to have, the year-to-year healthcare costs. But accidents happen. Bad diseases happen. And we know, everybody knows, no matter how tough a game they talk, that at the end of the day, the hospital's going to do it. They may hound you for the rest of life and try to collect your debts. But when they can't, they're going to take it away from you. Look at it this way. The average vaginal delivery in the United States is $30,000.
All I heard was vaginal delivery. Go ahead.
The average C-section in the United States is $50,000. Who's got that kind of money? Period. So, I mean, this is why, of course, it costs more to insure a woman than a man. But doing anything in a hospital these days costs a fortune. And it's unless you're just, no one has this kind of money. Nobody, which is why everybody gets insurance. So everybody talks a mean game, but the second you get sick, you get cancer, you are going to expect the hospital to give it to you. You're going to complain. When you go bankrupt, it's going to be a problem, and then the rest of us wind up paying for it. So at some point, either everybody has to take care of themselves, or when the market fails, that's when government has to step in and do it for them. And I think we're reaching a point where we have shown that the market cannot get everybody insured. It's costing us a fortune. It's not working out well. And that's when the government steps in to try to do it itself.
Steve, Illinois, you're on stand-up.
Hey, Pete. My mom wanted me to look for a supplemental for Medicare on the AARP website, United Healthcare. And I was wondering if there might be something better on the exchanges.
For anyone over the age of 65, you should be going to Medicare. Medicare is always going to be the better deal. And to be honest, I don't think there are going to be plans offered for people over the age of 65 in the exchanges. Even if they were, they would be prohibitively expensive. The plans, Medicare supplemental plans, are specifically built to supplement Medicare and work with Medicare, and the exchanges are not.
Okay, so the AARP, United Healthcare, is the only way to go?
No. There are lots and lots of Medicare supplemental plans. There should be phone numbers. I would actually check the internet, go to Medicare. There are people who will come out and discuss options with you. And who will help. They're the navigators that they're trying to get done for the exchanges. Of course, they're blocked for exchanges, but everybody loves them for Medicare. But there are people who will describe the many different. You do not have to go to the ARP one. There are lots of companies that do Medicare supplemental plans. You can see them on TV all the time advertised. And so, no, that is not the only plan. There are other plans to look at.
Do you have an opinion on any of those?
To be honest, it's a very personal decision. It depends sort of how much you want to pay, how much you want to cover, what you want in deductibles, what you want in coinsurance. So there is no this is the best one. It depends which one works for you. It's the same thing with the Part D drug programs. You know, depending upon what medications you're on, what your needs might be in the next year, you may choose very different Medicare Part D drug coverage plan. So it would be almost impossible for me, without knowing a ton of details, to tell you which one would be best for you.
So what would be a good resource for researching all of this?
Again, I think that probably I would look up like local navigators. I would go to the website or ask like tell her to ask her friends. I bet inevitably all of them have done this, where they've talked to somebody from Medicare or somebody who works for one of the companies who comes out and helps explain what the different options are.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thanks, Steve. Deep brain Steve. Deep breath Steve never calls the show anymore. Doesn't listen, I don't think, anymore.
Was that because you went to mornings or did you really finally irk him?
Mornings. Yeah, he stopped listening, I think.
What about that mosquito guy?
Mosquito Dan. I was cleaning that email the other day, and I saw emails from Mosquito Dan, and I almost emailed him back, and said, what happened to you? But I hated him so much, I was fine with it.
Yeah.
He despised that guy.
It is, you know what, it's common.
It's weird when you shift. Like, I've always argued that Oprah, Bill O'Reilly, Howard Stern — Howard might be an exception, but even Howard — people are not nearly as loyal to a personality or to a program as they are to their schedule. And that's totally normal. Meaning, like, if your favorite show moves to a different time, the show needs to be confident enough to know that they'll do well in this time slot if they did well in that time slot. But it's always, you know, it's scary to do. It was scary for me to do. But, I mean, like, people aren't going to move heaven and earth. Some are. Some will, certainly. I have. I mean, I always, you know, Howard's on all the time, so I still listen to Howard. But, I mean, you don't do that. You don't change your entire life to go with somebody.
How much,
necessarily. So.
How much traffic do they do? Can they track the on-demand stuff?
They've got to be able to track that. Here.
Do they tell you anything? You know
I've never even asked about on-demand, but I don't know if I want.
No, I'm just curious because that could be a way people could still get it even if you move.
People, yeah, a lot of people, you know, listen on demand. That's for sure, and I love all the people who listen to this program on demand. Yeah. And I hear from a lot of them, especially on Twitter @PeteDominick.
But, I mean, we got to be getting close to where, like, even the in-car radios would be. If your show's not on, it could just pull down the in-on.
I'm
the
pretty sure, but you still have to have an internet.
No, I'm not. I'm saying, but again, well, my phone, my car, for instance, and it's a couple years old. You plug the phone into the car, and all of a sudden you have internet, so I can it can download traffic and everything else through my phone. So I imagine we're getting to a point where you could do that.
Yeah, I guess.
What do you mean, you guess? I'm telling you it's occurring.
I got confused and I wanted to move on, so I just said, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if you plug your phone in, you got internet. Next thing you know, they could be just streaming.
Your phone doesn't send – I mean, you're playing whatever comes off your phone, your computer phone, not your car.
No, if I pull up –
Your minivan?
I don't have a minivan.
You do have a minivan.
My wife has a minivan. Hers does not do this.
I'm sorry.
Mine does.
When he says I don't have a minivan, that's –
No, I'm talking about my
– Objectively, I – You have a minivan. Your family has a minivan.
My wife's car, the minivan.
Is a minivan.
Okay, fine. The minivan we
that
own
you
does
drive.
Not
Always
do
drive
this.
When
nope.
you're with your kids.
Does not do this. Senior so the driver. Car I'm talking about is my Camry. So you plug the phone in. It doesn't, it's not what it has. The Toyota has its own app. So if I pull up the GPS, for instance, the map, it will just pull down traffic information from somewhere. Like, it just goes to its own internet and pulls off the traffic information. I can look stuff up on the internet. It searches the internet. It's not access. I'm not doing something on the phone and it's going there. Oh. It's using my phone for an internet connection.
Your car does have a computer in it that is downloading something.
Something.
How come the GPS programs and cars don't have updates, it seems?
But mine does, because it actually can use my phone for internet to actually
Oh,
get
it
updates.
Goes through your phone to
I
get that traffic?
I plug the phone in, and yes, the phone's cellular internet. Does everyone else get this? Is this just me?
I don't drive a car regularly, so
that's not
that
an answer,
sense.
Though.
I mean, I guess it makes sense. Yeah, when you put your phone in, it adapts
it
to the phone.
It uses the phone as like a modem. It's it's pulling.
It tethers the phone to
Thank
the
you.
Car and uses it as a proxy internet provider, probably against the wishes of most cellular service plans.
I don't think so, because I'm still paying for the data. But, yes.
He's a hacker.
What do you think of the new iOS on
I like it. For no other reason, it's so easy to get to airplane mode. I love that. So easy to get to the flashlight.
When do you use airplane mode?
When I'm on airplanes.
Only when you're on airplanes, though.
Well, I'm doing a lot of traveling in the next
Yeah, but only – so that can't be a reason to like it.
You'd be shocked at how much it is.
It's a three-step process.
No, not anymore. It's like, whoop, it's there. That's
the
beauty.
How does it go?
Whoop.
I've been using mirroring a lot at home on the Apple TV.
Yeah, we had mirroring before this, though.
Before TV?
Before iOS 7.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's true. But I just wanted to say that I've been using it over the weekend.
No, well, enjoy.
I sat on my couch and figured out mirroring. It took me 7 hours.
I've been doing a lot of mirroring to learn how to do the correct rainbow loom stitches.
Oh, you're doing them yourself?
Well, with no. I work in a sweatshop.
Oh. Aaron
Carroll. My daughter is running a sweatshop, and I am working it.
Dr. Aaron Carroll is here. He's hanging out the whole program. Diane Ravitch on education, her new book. And then it's Stand Up on Drugs all week long. We'll start that when we come back.